Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of The Negotiation, and on today's show I am joined by Alex Phillips, the China Corridor Director for Santander UK. Alex shares insights into the evolving trade relationship between the UK and China and how Santander UK facilitates international growth opportunities for British companies looking to expand into China and other Asian markets. The conversation kicks off with Alex discussing his current location and his role in the ongoing China Business Roadshow in the UK, which aims to strengthen ties between UK and Chinese businesses. Alex then delves into his personal journey, sharing what sparked his interest in China and the path that led him to his current position at Santander UK. Alex introduces the audience to the Santander Navigator platform, explaining how it supports companies in accessing international markets and what specific services Santander provides to facilitate global business expansion. He highlights the sectors where UK companies are currently thriving in China, discusses areas with significant growth potential, and outlines the challenges faced by foreign businesses in the Chinese market. Focusing on consumer brands, Alex explains why British brands resonate well with Chinese consumers and which sectors are particularly successful. He offers practical advice for mid-sized British brands considering exporting to China, detailing the crucial steps they should take in the initial months of entering the market. Lastly, Alex expands the discussion to other promising export markets outside of China, providing insights on opportunities for British companies looking to broaden their international presence. Enjoy.
China, because of its size and diversity as well, right? You can't talk about Chinese consumers as if it's kind of, you know, one thing. Consumers in Shanghai, even within first tier cities, right, they behave slightly different to those in Beijing, to those in Guangzhou or Shenzhen, and then kind of you get to second, third tier cities and other regions. And within all of that, yeah, like you said, there's always nuanced opportunities coming up, even if in a certain product segment, you know, it's fairly busy and, you know, you could perceive it as saturated. If you've got the right brand, if you've got the right product and the right approach, there's probably still potentially a gap in market.
Home to over 4 billion people, the Asia-Pacific region boasts one of the most powerful consumer markets on the planet. Not only is it home to half of the world's under 30 population, but it's also home to more than half the world's internet users. It's a market that no globally minded organization should ignore. But entering markets like China, Japan, or Southeast Asia is no easy task. Just ask the likes of Microsoft, Google, Uber, and Facebook. However, times are changing, and with the right partners, doors are slowly opening as more and more companies find success growing their key markets in APAC. I myself spent 8 years in China, mostly as a venture capitalist, helping early-stage tech companies grow in the Asia-Pacific market successfully. This show is dedicated to uncovering and examining successful Asia market entry and growth strategies by interviewing the experts who've done it before and truly understand what it takes to be successful in the region. My name is Todd Embley, and welcome to The Negotiation. Negotiation brought to you by WPIC Marketing and Technologies. Alex, welcome to the Negotiation Podcast.
Good to be here, Todd. Thanks for inviting me.
Okay, let's start. Where are you recording from today?
So I am joining you from surprisingly sunny and warm UK. Specifically speaking to you from my home base near Oxford today. But you can usually find me working from one of our main offices in central London.
I just recorded Zarina Kanji as well, for those of you who are tracking our episodes here. Very, very close together. And she said almost the exact same thing, surprisingly warm and sunny.
We love to talk UK. About weather.
that was funny. Tell us a little bit about your journey. You and I were talking about how we had a similar timeline of time spent in China. Tell us a little bit about your journey leading up to where you are today.
Sure, no problem. So my own China journey dates back to 2009, when I first went out to China on an exchange program, which was organized by a professor at the law school I was studying at in the UK. And that really sparked my curiosity, which led ultimately to spending the best part of a decade, about 8 years or so, living and working out in China. So during that time, I studied for a master's in Chinese law at Peking University. I worked with the UK government in what is now the Department for Business and Trade. Working with UK companies, primarily in the financial and professional services sector, but a few other roles as well, on market entry and assistance with plans in China. And then I moved to the private sector, where I worked with a corporate service, an advisory firm, primarily, again, assisting SMEs from overseas markets with their entry and growth plans in China. So in a minute or so, that's a snapshot of how I entered China and kind of how I spent my time there.
Let's start with the China Business Roadshow going on in the UK right now. What can you tell us about that?
Sure thing. So over the past 2 weeks, as you said, I've mainly been on the road across the UK with the China Britain Business Council, leading on our China Business Roadshow. So we've had stops in Leeds, Birmingham, Edinburgh, and London. So each session has been a half-day workshop where we take businesses through almost like a crash course of getting started when it comes to doing business in China. So everything from, you know, ensuring your exports are China ready, considerations around intellectual property protection, developing a China focused business model in terms of that, you know, localizing your offering to the Chinese market, how to go about finding distributors that really understand your offering, complying with China regulations, bits around e-commerce strategies as well. And it was great to have Zarina join us as part of our panel in London just last Thursday. So yeah, I mean, it was half a day, right? So you can only cover everything at a high level, but it was really to engage, you know, businesses who are China curious, right? And give them a little bit more assistance on getting them to a point where they're a bit more confident to make some moves in the market. So we had over 100 register their interest in those sessions and over 50 that came in person, which I think is a good reflection of the appetite amongst UK businesses that has slowly but surely built up since early 2023, so last year when China reopened its borders and business engagement could recommence after the COVID-19 years and the closed borders.
I'm going to ask you about the Santander Navigator platform, but first, tell us about your current role as China Corridor Director.
Sure. So my current role with Santander, I mean, I'm fortunate enough to be able to now use all those years' experience of living and working in China and some of the experience since as part of a team of over a dozen country or regional market specialists. And we sit within Santander as a within our corporate and commercial bank in the UK, but we're not bankers by background. As I've just told you, I mean, we sit within the bank to assist companies identify opportunities and help them overcome challenges with regards to the trade and investment with the markets we cover. So in my case, that's China and Hong Kong. And this includes companies who are exporting, those managing supply chains and sourcing, right through to those who are looking to set up subsidiary operations in the market. And a big part of that for me is having relationships with an ecosystem of market providers, service providers in the market, working with them and, you know, very proud to be working alongside WPIC in this respect on helping curate exclusive insights and solutions for companies who are using Santander Navigator.
The Santander Navigator platform, please introduce it to the audience and how Santander UK can help a company access international growth opportunities in China.
With pleasure.
Or elsewhere.
Yeah, no worries. So I'll take a step back first and explain how and why Santander Navigator came into being and the role it plays, like I said, in helping companies access opportunities in China, but more broadly as well. So for the past 7 years now, we've run a biannual survey called the Trade Barometer. And this surveys thousands of UK SMEs twice a year on their sentiment towards international trade. So which markets they see the highest growth opportunities, the greatest challenges, type of support they seek, et cetera, et cetera. And across this time, four consistent themes arise every time. So it's about accessing opportunities and partners in terms of the challenges companies face when looking to trade internationally, overcoming bureaucracy and regulation, logistics and shipping, particularly over the last few years where shipping costs and supply chain routes have been quite disrupted and there's been heavy fluctuation in the price of shipping. And finally, but for us, you know, last but not least, banking and finance. But whilst the latter may be of most importance to us commercially as a bank, obviously, it's not necessarily to our customers. So without identifying the right opportunities, right, assessing which markets you should enter, understanding the regulation and bureaucracy in those markets, there's no need, you know, for banking and financing solutions at that point. So, you know, we set out to initially build a manual ecosystem of contacts and service providers to support the trade journey. So from companies that can identify the right opportunities or distributors or buyers for your products in a market, who can help you through the regulatory and legal and logistics and shipping. And so we built that up across 25 plus markets. And in 2022, actually almost 2 years ago to the date that we're speaking now, we launched the digital proposition of that in the form of Santander Navigator. So essentially taking that manual ecosystem that we've built up and putting it into a one-stop-shop type portal online for international trade where SMEs can access the insights that those different providers and contacts have about the market or the certain regulation that they have an expertise in, giving them access to opportunities to work with those that ecosystem of providers, bespoke solutions that we work with providers on offering the audience that can access Santander Navigator, and also running a host of different activities and events to help them cross all of those global markets.
That is a behemoth. That is big. I'm just thinking back from a technical point of view, how the last two years must have gone. But congratulations on putting something like that together.
No,
I think
you.
It's so much more difficult and complex to do than people might realize. So kudos to you guys.
It's been great. I mean, it's not without its challenges, but we now have, you know, close to 2,000 companies actively using the platform. And this is, you know, very much still in, well, it's been in MVP type stage until now. And, you know, excitingly, we've got now big ambitions to really scale that up further, both in the UK, but also across other markets.
Do you, the 2,000 companies, are you actively reaching out to companies, given your insights and data sets that you might, that you know certain companies, certain products, certain sectors might do well? Would you be actively pursuing, or do you allow them to come to you?
A bit of both. So we have five core sectors that we focus on, retail and wholesale, food and drink, life sciences, advanced manufacturing, and TMT. So, you know, we naturally as a bank hold relationships with companies across all of those sectors. And then, you know, the platform is not just only open to banking clients, it's open to any UK registered company. So it allows us to start having that relationship with prospects or, you know, companies that we'd be interested in working with as well. And by signing up to Santander Navigator, it also allows us to have a much more dynamic and interactive relationship with companies because, you know, they are actively using the platform. And, you know, by engaging with us, we can understand where they perceive growth opportunities to be for their business. So we can really, you know, better tailor our support as a result.
Obviously, you have a lot of insights and data that you have access to. What sectors are doing well for UK companies in China right now?
I mean, China is a massive market, right? To just put it simply. So there are opportunities typically across many sectors. I mean, but there are, I'd say, more opportunities in some from where I'm sitting than others. So to give you a snapshot of the 200 or so companies who are currently exporting to China on the platform, 83, just over 80 are in food and drink. Over 40 are in retail categories, 50 or so in manufacturing, and then around 16 in life sciences and 6 in TMT. So I think that kind of gives you a little bit of a breakdown of what companies are across sectors. So clearly, you know, companies in the consumer sectors are very active, right? Naturally, many manufacturers also will have some kind of connection to China as well. And there are, you know, probably reflective of the fact that there's relatively small number operating in TMT, maybe reflective of some of the more challenging areas that are faced by overseas companies with regards to doing business in China in that sector. And then we've got companies who have ambitions to export to China. We've got almost 400 of those. Again, about 200 in food and drink. So quite significant food and drink really coming through, I think, through some of the data that we're seeing. And then similar breakdown, 80 or so in retail, 50 or so in manufacturing, 30 or so in life sciences, and 20 in TMT. So similar trend there.
Where, in your opinion, is there room for significant growth?
I mean, again, potential growth across the board. I would say, you know, the UK has a deep and diverse consumer brand economy, right? We have a lot, you know, food and drink manufacturing and exports are incredibly important to our economy in the UK. And you can see that through the numbers that, you know, are telling us that they're looking at China. And I think there's many more food and drink brands out there who have a real opportunity in China. Especially those that have, you know, strong heritage, or, you know, the sell on the fact that they are, you know, premium or organic and kind of authentic and healthy ingredients increasingly. Health and wellness categories for sure. You know, supplements, nutraceuticals, vitamins, functional foods and drink products. We're for sure seeing, you know, strong appetite amongst UK manufacturers and brands. And I think there's much more room potentially in the market for more brands to enter in that space. Across other areas, I think, you know, big demand on medical technologies, medtech, advanced medical devices. In fact, about a month or so ago, I was out in Hong Kong with a group of companies in this space. And there's clearly still a strong market in China, in Greater China, for, you know, advanced medical technologies that can meet the growing demands in the market, from an aging population to the, you know, increasing prevalence of chronic diseases, etc. So that's another area there where we're seeing steady demand, and I think, you know, probably increasing opportunities, untapped opportunities for many UK firms.
I sometimes, you know, and I would do some similar analysis when looking at startups, technology startups, of how they were going to fit. And, you know, after 2-3 years, when they were pretty much ready to significantly penetrate, what would the opportunities be there? And I found that there was either the opportunities lied in a lag of potentially the market or behaviors or sentiments or activities had shifted, and there was a lag in companies, products, sectors catching up. So there was an opportunity there. Gaps where they're just some things had maybe shifted away from each other, creating a new space in between, that was an opportunity, or there was just new. I know market like China seems just incredibly dense and packed, and that some of the worry would be that it'd just be really tough to try to fit in. But I think it's only that seemingly dense in a snapshot, because it is a fast moving, dynamic playing field. and gaps and opportunities are opening up at all times. Would you agree with that statement?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, China, because of its size and diversity as well, right? You can't talk about, you know, the Chinese consumer as if it's kind of, you know, one thing. You know, consumers in Shanghai, even within first tier cities, right, they behave slightly different to those in Beijing, to those in Guangzhou or Shenzhen, and then kind of you get to second, third tier cities and other regions, urban versus rural, etc. So, and within all of that, yeah, like you said, there's always nuanced opportunities coming up across certain, even if in a certain product segment, you know, it's fairly busy, and you know, you could perceive it as saturated. As you said, if you've got the right brand, if you've got the right product, and the right approach, there's probably still potentially a gap in the market for you.
Talk to us a little bit about some of the challenges brands might face looking for opportunities in China.
So we covered this in the UK China Business Roadshow that we talked about earlier on. I mean, a lot of those that I mentioned in terms of broader themes are all challenges in China, right? I mean, we typically see bureaucracy and regulation come up as one of the top challenges for SMEs, in particular UK SMEs, wanting to break into China, you know, just understanding. And again, I think this may have improved in certain areas quite a lot over the past 10 to 20 years, but relatively speaking, compared to markets like the UK or some other closer to home markets where, you know, brands and companies may be more used to operating. And China can come across as still quite bureaucratic in terms of, you know, particularly if you're looking to set up operations in the market. So that comes up as one of the key challenges. Interestingly, in China in particular, when we're conducting our survey, rising costs is becoming more of an issue as well. So we see that steadily increasing as an issue that the companies are telling us they're facing. And again, you know, for you and I, it's probably not surprising, right? You know, to operate a business and out from Shanghai these days is not too dissimilar to many other global cities. So, you know, rising costs in terms of labor costs, in terms of input costs from elsewhere, office rental, etc., is a key challenge. I think shipping as well. So logistics, getting your products from A to B, especially, you know, products that are going on a boat from UK to China, or, you know, indeed the other way around. You know, a lot of the supply chain disruptions hit hard and means that lead times can really be extended by some weeks, in some cases months as a result. So, you know, that comes up, especially in some of our more recent surveys.
Let's narrow it down to just consumer brands for this next question. What sectors within that do well in China for British brands? And furthermore, why do you think the UK brand of the ones that are doing well, why does that UK brand really resonate well with Chinese consumers?
It's a good question.
It's almost like UK as a brand, right?
Yeah. I mean, if you look at the data, right? And this comes across just, you know, if you're out in China during some of the big trade shows like CIE and FHC, and I was out there last year, November, you know, whiskey and beverages, whiskey in particular, right? And particularly, you know, from Scotland, continues to do well in China. And it plays off its heritage, its brand, its reputation, which is known for, you know, high quality, and that resonates a lot, I think, with Chinese consumers. Ditto if we're talking about same region as the UK, salmon exports, you know, are also do particularly well. But beyond that, I think, and I mentioned We were out at the FHC and CIE in November last year. And part of that, we work with the China-Britain Business Council, who I know you know well, also on taking a group of companies from the Santander Navigator program and platform out to China for those shows. And CBBC helped us run a program for those companies as well. And we had, you know, three companies very much in the health and wellness space, who have gone on to now launch their brands in China. So one was a mushroom-based supplement company, another company who produce kind of liquid form supplements and vitamins. But then we had, you know, premium ice cream brand. We had a few dairy companies, and again, British dairy, British cheese, British, you know, other dairy products, I think have a good reputation. In terms of UK brand more broadly, I mean, you can't just lead on that, I think is the first message. I think gone are the days where you can kind of stick a union flag on your product and hope that it sells off the back of it. It's still got to have and represent something unique that really appeals to consumers in China. And, you know, that could be the fact that, you know, you could still play on your heritage. You know, there are many consumer brands in China, in the UK, that date back, you know, 100 plus years, and, you know, have that story be that goes along with it that you can really sell off in China and that can really engage audiences. But, you know, there are many, you know, innovative, newer companies who, because UK has a strong consumer sector, and, you know, for example, taking the food and drink industry as well, that, you know, it's ripe for innovation. There's a lot of new innovative products coming out of the UK that have good opportunities and have gone on to sell well in China. You know, other companies across the consumer sector outside of food and drink that we supported. So, you know, some heritage and luxury fashion brands, so some premium men's footwear brands we've supported with business development and helping them get in contact with the right contacts out in China. You know, some mother and baby brands. So, you know, there are a few different categories.
Now we're going to get into the advice section. So you are going to be giving advice. Let's start at 30,000 feet. I will ask you on the back half, maybe for a step-by-step 3, 6, 12 month kind of action plan. But let's start with just a 30,000 foot overall advice to give to a mid-sized British brand looking to export to China or other Asian markets. What have you learned to be some of the most important advice that you would offer?
Broad principles, right? And I shared this at the roadshow in the UK over the last couple of weeks. I think firstly, take your time and be purposeful about your plans in a market like China. And what I mean by that is, I think, you know, often a company, a brand can be approached by a distributor or potential contact in China and kind of react to that. And then, you know, really try and rush things through. But actually, you know, whilst that's a good sign, if you are approached, it means there's interest in your brand. But China is a huge market. The scale is significant. So think very carefully about, you know, who you want to give those distribution rights away to, what's the kind of regional remit of those distribution rights, etc. Or indeed, taking a further step back, just understanding the market, consumer appetite, likely consumer behavior around your product, what are the best routes to market, e-commerce versus offline, or, you know, mix of both. So take your time, be purposeful. I think linked to that, you know, over that time, really build your ecosystem. Talk to as many people who have a specialism in your sector as possible. And, you know, build that ecosystem of contacts who can support you through the way. And, you know, there is a lot of support on offer out there, both UK-based and out in China that you can really take advantage of. And thirdly, I think underpinning all of that, you know, apply the same business principles and rigor that you would for any other market, right? It is, the opportunity is significant, but the challenges can be too. And so, you know, just do your homework, apply the same business rigor and principles that you would in your home or any other market. And if you apply all those three, I think you set yourself up nicely.
So now we get into some granularity. Decision is made. We've got appetite. We've got budget. We've got interest. We want to move forward. And I don't know, we're a craft relish company that has, 15 different types of relishes or hot sauces or mustards or something. I don't know. I don't know how well mustard would do in China, but
not one of them. Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, I know. Well, hey, maybe there's a gap and there's a lot of pioneering costs there probably. Let's put together maybe like what they should be thinking about in the first 3 and then 6 and 12 months. Key steps, key thoughts, key action items that you would suggest they think hard about performing in that time period.
So yeah, in the first 3, 6, 9 months.
Yeah, 3, 6, 12 months, and you could take your pick.
So I think first of all, you've got to understand, and it is worth investing the time and money to thoroughly understand what and where the opportunity is. So, you know, before diving, it can be tempting, right? Especially as, you know, if you're a busy head of international sales or export director, you know, just to want to grab some of the first contacts or opportunities and get it done. And that's it, right? You've ticked off China. You can move on to the next market. But I think it is well worthwhile to take the time to do the research in a market the size of China. And, you know, you should expect that to occupy, I think, you know, the first few months there. Once you're at that stage where you've really understood the opportunity, I think, you know, beyond that first 3 months, it's about building that plan to activate. And, you know, if we take the example of a consumer brand, start activating your brand in China. And again, you know, that takes a little bit of time to build that momentum from what I've seen. And, you know, really choosing the right partners and different service providers who can help you along the way. And I think, you know, approaching the 12-month mark, again, it takes time to build a business in a market the size of China, and therefore it takes time to deliver returns. But by, you know, year one, I think you should, depending, expect to, you know, have a clear path to a sustainable business in China that's delivering those returns for you.
Last question. Outside of China, what export markets are particularly promising, and you can take that in any derivative you like, for British companies?
Mm. So in the latest Trade Barometer survey, China was listed as number 7 in terms of a number of companies telling us that China is a priority export market for them. Top 3 were US, Canada, and Australia. And then the other markets that came ahead of China were Germany, France, and the UAE as well. And more broadly, you know, I'm seeing quite a lot of interest from companies in the Middle East at the moment. But, you know, US, Canada, and Australia are always up there. US in particular typically takes number 1 spot. It's where they see big growth opportunities as well. But, you know, if you speak to my counterpart who covers the US, she will tell you it is not an easy market. Just because we share the same language, right? There's still an incredible amount of competition out there.
Alex Phillips, China Corridor Director for Santander, UK. Thank you very, very much for coming on the show today. We really appreciated having you on.
Thanks, Todd. It's been really good to talk to you.
Okay, for everybody listening to the audio only, don't forget to head over to the WPIC YouTube channel for shorts and full versions of this and get to see Alex and I and our pretty faces out here. And for those of you watching on the YouTube, but you need your eyes and your other senses for other things, feel free to continue on the audio version podcast available on all your favorite podcast platforms. So for me, for everybody at The Negotiation, and for Alex, thanks very much for tuning in, and we'll talk to you next time.
Growing a company is hard. Doing it in a foreign market, exponentially so. The best piece of advice I can give you is not to do it alone. When you start looking at the Asia-Pacific region for further expansion possibilities, and I sincerely hope you do, make sure you choose the right partners to do it with. My good friends at WPIC Marketing and Technologies have almost 20 years of experience helping brands, just like yours, enter China, Japan, and Southeast Asia. I hope you enjoyed this episode of The Negotiation, and if you're interested in being a guest or want to connect with me or any of our team, please reach out to us at podcast@wpic.co, and be sure to rate, comment, and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.